and at times it was a grieving love. Come to me now.
You're listening to WGXC Acre, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM. We're here for you.
Wave Farms WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have one you don't need and it's a Macintosh 2019 or newer, please email info@wgxc.org for more information. And thank you for your contribution.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more, plus advance notice of close-up series conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Saugerties, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org. That's upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Cochrane Media in Cairo, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Evening, and thank you for joining. I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, a wavefarm.org enterprise. Here is where every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. And why talk about race? Some continue to ask me, and my answer remains simply to combat racism. Education is key and discussion a must. And now let's get talking, because
no topic is taboo.
See, we are right on cue here. Not but that means that we don't have to be perfect to be wonderful with ourselves, right? Right, guests. Those are my two beautiful guests that I will share more information about as we continue the show. You have just heard the Olympic theme song. And I thought, having the Olympics, being that we've just ended the Paris Olympics of 2024 in one of my favorite cities, Gay Paris. So I thought that would be really great to highlight when we talk about being our best selves, because we think of people who are going as fast as they can, or as being as strong as they are, or being as diligent as they can be with whatever they do in life. Those are people who are being their best. Are they perfect? No, they're not perfect, but they are their best selves. And so throughout this show, we will have little snippets of those who are doing their best in the Olympics. And we're also going to talk about some terms that I thought were interesting when we're describing being our best selves. And we're also going to share a little bit about a recent event, or yeah, I guess it's a recent event, but this may not be one in the making, as far as the event is one where the two most prominent members who contribute to having the event are retiring now after 60 years in the Columbia County area. So I just wanted to mention them right now. Mr. and Mrs. Mosley and the person specifically, Elena Mosley of Operation Unite, she hosts the Sankofa Black Cultural Arts Festival in Hudson at the, have you gone this year? I'm talking to you right now, Garrett, as I'm looking at him. He's like looking in the air. So I'm thinking, did you attend this year's Sankofa Black Arts Cultural Festival?
I actually did not, unfortunately, but I...
Because people thought it was going to be rained out.
Hear about it coming up, and then there were some people thinking it might be rained out.
But it wasn't. Anyway, it was the 60th anniversary, and they're passing, I should say, the baton, because we're going to be showing the Olympic relays later, or I should say you're going to be able to hear it. And yeah, they're passing the baton to the next generation. So as that is really wonderful, we definitely want to give applause and ding of the bell to those who've made it special. I grew up in Hudson, and I remember when it was a block party on Columbia Street. Then it graduated to Warren Street, and then to our new beautiful Front Street Park, or was it called Henry Hudson Park now? And yeah, yes. And then they made it into a parade where we even had people on stilts circus. So it's been quite an event, and it's grown and has become a staple in the area. And people come from all around. Of course, we're right now in Catskill. So, you know, people come from Catskill, people come from Albany, attend such a festival. So it's really wonderful that it was allowed to continue and that the changing of the guard is happening. And I'm here saying, I know some people talk to me about maybe being the next person in line, but I really want to pass the baton and the torch to the next generation. So I'm looking forward to who's going to take up the baton and run away with it. So I just want to share that with the local community. And we're going to be asking our viewers or our listeners to call in. So I'm going to share have the number being shared to you, but by our production assistant here, who's also the number one fan of the show, Garrett Roche of the Roche Solid Truth podcast, where positivity is at its most, how do you say
it? Positivity at its purest
form.
RocheSolidTruth.com.
There it is. The two P's got to me today. So share with everyone now how they can call in and have a conversation with our guests and share any activities, because the right acts means you go out and you really support an ethnic or cultural event that you may not be specifically part of in your cultural identity, but certainly it's open to everyone and we can learn and grow from one another.
Let's continue to add some more nuts and bolts to that bridge of positivity by calling and joining us, listeners, 518-622-2598.
And he will repeat that right now for you.
518-622-2598. If you just happen to be listening internationally, by the way, you had a 001 before that area code.
Right. I think people can even call us when they're using WhatsApp, huh?
I believe so.
Technology. Indeed. Technology is keeping us all together. Okay, so back to the show. Next segment is a talk term. Do-do-do-do-do-do. And it's authentic. Can you say authentic, Garrett?
Authentic.
Exactly. That sounded like it was authentically said. So authentic is meaning just not false or copied. It's being genuine or real. And I just had a conversation with a friend of mine who felt that one of our future presidents, I'm hoping, Kamala Harris, may herself not actually be presented as being authentic. There was conversation on one of the parties that she is pretending or has pretended to be one of a different culture. And I'm thinking, how can you pretend to be of a different culture? You either have an affiliation, you have a feeling for your your identity, which is an authentic self. And if someone else can't confirm that, that's okay, because it's not about others telling us who we are, but we need to know who we are and live that way, live our best and truth selves. But I can say that for days. The best person to say that is our next guest. She's getting ready. She knows I'm going there. Her name is Tracy Borison, and she is a human potential optimizer. Yeah, I'm going to ask her what that is for you guys. She's been doing this for 16 years in marketing, customer experience, and sales. She currently runs TLB, Coaching and Events, as well as the international online community, Your Business Peeps, and that's P-E-P-S. Currently located in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I just came from Montreal. Tracy is passionate about authenticity and is always looking for opportunities to learn and grow to find the next iteration of what quote-unquote authentic Tracy looks like. She is committed to lighting as many personal brands on fire as possible and strives to make a positive impact in ensuring that authentic actions aren't only available outside of the workplace. Tracy, welcome to Race Talks, and please share with everyone more about who you are, and please answer the question about human potential optimizer, but of course, share with the people why you feel it's important to be on this show, Race Talks, and talking about race and ethnicity as it pertains to being your authentic self.
Okay, so that's a lot of questions. If I miss one, come back to it. I'm really excited to be here, Kimberly. I love what you framed at the beginning of the conversation about how nobody else can decide that you're authentic. Only you can decide that you're authentic. This is something I say all of the time, and I think is a common misconception about authenticity. Although there's a lot of complexities that come up from the political lens as well. So we can go there if we want to, but we don't necessarily have to. Human potential optimization. Okay, so this is something that I feel is intricately related to authenticity. And I believe that every single human that exists on the planet is here because they're supposed to be here. And that the greatest contribution that we can make during our lives is to live up to our own personal human potential. And my personal potential is different than yours, is different than the listeners, is different than Garrett's, is different than everybody's, is different. And so when we're talking about optimizing people's human potential, it's what does that look like for you? What do you feel called to do? What feels like an authentic representation of you? What's your contribution? There's many different ways we can say it. But the point is that it's unique to each person. And if we go on this path of exploring what is our human potential and what can we do and how can we create community around ourselves to optimize it, whew, just watch out, world. People will be doing amazing things. One of the reasons why I felt so called to bring this conversation to the show is that there is, just like I mentioned with politics, there's another level of complexity that exists with authenticity when we're talking about race and ethnicity and the space that people have been given historically to express or not express. And there are different groups who have been given more permission historically to express. And so it's easier for those groups to just quote unquote be authentic because they have had the space, they've had the permission. And while at the end of the day, it is each individual person's efforts that lead up to authenticity. Like, I can't make you be authentic. That's not how like authenticity works. We all have to make that own decision for ourselves to live into that potential and to choose who we are and to express that. But that does not mean that that is safe in every place for people to do that. So this is why I was excited to bring the conversation to the airwaves. It's not an easy conversation. There's not a simple solution for this, but if we're not talking about it, then we're not making progress. So I'm excited to explore where it goes today.
Yay. I swear, when you were saying, as you were talking, all these pictures were conjured up in my head, starting from even when I was maybe six. So I went from six, thinking about what authentic Kimberly was like. And that's not the same person as Kimberly at going to college, when I don't even know if I was authentic then because I was trying to figure me out, right?
I feel like the like teenage years are, I actually feel like people are trying to be, like they're going through this experimentation phase to figure out what is authentic, but very rarely in society do we create space for that exploration to occur. So what happens instead is we end up on this trajectory of not exploring what it is to be our authentic self, where our six-year-old versions, I have a six-year-old son right now, and like, they're pretty fully expressed, right?
Like, yes.
They don't know the rules of society yet. Yes. So they just be themselves. And it's so interesting to watch how that happens, because we do have natural points in our journey where we want to explore what that feels like. And we go through changes in life, and then being authentic looks different, but we don't have the space to explore that. So then we just go back into the box. Except I think a lot of people really don't enjoy being in the box.
What about when you're saying to explore? There are also people who are looking to be in a box because it's easier or it's more convenient, or it may even feel good for a short period of time being in that box. How might one decide to get out of that box when, you know, even though it's not perfect, it's more comfortable because it's known? And as I say that, I'm thinking also of me. It's all going to be about me tonight. When I was younger, I mean, I was, you know, Kimberly Irwin, but I also wanted to be like that little girl I saw across the street, you know. I guess we might have had more than one identity, but how do we, I mean, is it okay to choose? Or how might parents who are listening to you and they have a six-year-old, you know, you want your child to be their best selves, but like you said, they're great at exploring that, but then they're also being put in a box because, you know, girls, you know, in gym, girls have to stand over here and boys stand over here. We don't in school, you know, make people line up by their ethnic identity, but we're still doing it by their gender, right? And it's coming to head with even in the Olympics where, you know, can a person who hasn't been completely changed by science to one gender as opposed to the gender they were born with, you know, how can that be manifested in a good space at six or however age?
So first of all, what Kimberly just pointed out was a lot of the complexities that come with this conversation. And as I mentioned, there's not necessarily one answer that is going to make sense for all people, because the nature of authenticity is that like there's a something that is right for you and there's something that's right for me, and those are not necessarily the same thing. And so one of the things I love to practice with my son is just helping him separate who he is, what he would do. This is like the core question I always come back to in authenticity. What would you do? Not who are you? This is like a way too huge of a question. Mm. And as you alluded to as well, Kimberly, like we are not just one identity. We are many things. I am a mom and I'm a sister and I'm a wife and I am a friend and I'm a marketer and I'm a nerd and I'm a tea drinker and I'm like a whole bunch of things.
And an interviewee.
We don't actually have an interviewee and sometimes an interviewer, right?
Like yes.
We're all many things. And so when we ask these really tricky questions like, who am I? It's actually not answerable because I'm lots of things. I always say like the only way to answer that is I am Tracy Borison, and Tracy Borison is many things. What part of that do you want to talk about? But when we have this skill of figuring out what we would do versus what our parents would do versus what our teacher does versus what our sister does versus what that girl across the street does, that allows us to intentionally choose something. So if I know this is me and I know that is you, but you have an idea that I kind of like, or you have an outfit that I'm really vibing with, I would love to wear more pink, right? Like, you can do that, right? But it's not that you should do that. It's that you can choose that. And you create that separation between you and yourself. That I'm not doing something because I should. I'm doing something because I choose. And if I choose to sit quietly and listen to the story at story time, that's great. And if I don't choose that, I mean, there might be ramifications. There still may be consequences with that, but you know you chose it. And so you have this ability to choose. You have this ability to understand what you would do. But then you also have the ability to trade that without losing it as part of your identity. So I might want to talk during story time. I mean, personally, I learn through conversation. So I'm actually terrible at just like sitting and listening to stuff. I like to converse and try on ideas. That's how I learn. That's not how I got to learn in school. So I decided to put myself in the box to like keep myself safe. I didn't want to get detention. I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to do that. I had a teacher in high school who made me sit underneath the fire blanket because I asked too many questions. And I was, and yeah, I had a lot of people had a lot to say about that. I shared it a lot of times. But like, so we do these things. But if you, like, at that point, I didn't have the ability to know that I traded away that part of my identity to keep myself safe. But we can actually make choices to keep ourselves safe without trading away that part of our identity if we know the difference. And so if we can create opportunities for our children to explore those types of things in a safe space, and unfortunately for some children, home is not a safe space. We have to look at that as well, right? But if, and this is something I have a goal of creating, and Kimberly, I think we talked about this before, is that like, if there is one, if every kid has one safe space, doesn't have to be home, maybe it's school, right? Maybe it's a neighbor, maybe whatever. But if we can all work together to create these safe spaces for children to explore what their identity versus someone else's version of what you should be or how you must do this to keep yourself safe in the world, which is very relevant in a lot of the racial conversations, at least they know the difference. Right? And then we don't get adults that feel so disempowered to the point that they can't actually make a difference in the system because they've become prisoners of the system. And in order to break this stuff, we the more of us that can work together, the better. And we feel like we have that capability then to do that to whatever degree feels right for you. And different people are called to like different callings. Right? You get these people who are called to run a country, and other people might be looking at me at them and being like, oh my God, how do you have the courage to do that? We don't all have to have that level of courage. But just look what it does, right? Like, look what it does when you can see somebody like you in a position of power like that, and how you can have these conversations about, yeah, I bet you there's a whole bunch of people who think Kamala is being inauthentic. You don't get to decide. You don't get to decide if I'm being authentic. You don't like what I'm saying. That's a you thing. Anyway, I feel like I opened a can of worms with
no,
all of that.
You've put it all in. You've packed it all in. But as a English teacher who has worked with many different children of all different ages, I think what you said is really great for teachers, because teachers are the ones that are mostly in a day with young people and when they're around other people, and they can set the tone for a safe space. And I've dealt with teachers and media assistants who read books to children, and they say, you know, some of them won't answer questions from me. So they put the onus on the child that the child has the issue. But really, if a child isn't opening up to you, what are you not seeing in that child that child may need to feel that space is safe? So I like that you mentioned that safe space. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe I have the solution right here. You could, through your marketing and all the guru things you do with businesses, maybe look to have, you know, how with if you're gay or lesbian, there's this star or this picture on the doors of teachers, where if you're having an issue, you know, you can go to this person to have that conversation. Right.
Yeah. It's like a block parent.
Yes.
At school.
And that can be everywhere.
Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily mean that like every single person feels capable of creating that kind of safe space, but that in any given space, there is one person who can stand up and be like, yeah.
And also that even
see these.
Yeah. And also that even if a person doesn't have that capability, knowing that others do makes them know that maybe I could learn or at least this is an okay student. You know, this behavior that they're exhibiting is fine for them to exhibit it right now. And for them to do this, their behavior, like you're saying, their action, there's a place for them to converse or behave in that way that they can, you know, better, you know, change, but have someone see them as authentically them. I'll end it like that.
I think like the thing I always think about kids is if, and I mean, I would love to extrapolate this to adults too, to be honest with you, of all races and all identities, is this is a good person, right? This is a good kid. Are they exhibiting bad behavior? Possible, right? Totally possible. My son, who I think is a very good kid, punched 2 different kids in the face on 2 consecutive days at school, right? And so for me, I was really curious about that. What is going on here? Because I know that this is not like your normal way of being. So how can I get curious about that? But yeah, I think we could solve a lot of problems by owning our experience and also giving ourselves permission to be curious about other people instead of judging other people, including kids.
Well, I think that is many great statements, so that those who are listening with young people and for themselves to take that to heart. Normally, we would have another segment, but because we're talking about children and because my next guest has written a book for children, I think this is a great time to introduce her. So, Reverend Dr. Denise Parker Lawrence is our next guest. She is an author of Walking by Faith, which is a book that allows people to understand how to live their best life. A little bit about Reverend. She said I can call her Reverend Denise, so I'm going to go ahead and do that as I seek to share a good portion of her bio. The Reverend Dr. Denise Parker Lawrence is a board-certified chaplain, pastoral counselor, teacher, writer, and community leader who strives to live her life as the only Bible one may ever read. She recently joined the ministerial staff of Kingdom Fellowship African Methodist Episcopal, AME, with Pastor Matthew L. Watley in Calverton, Maryland. Prior to her relocation to Maryland, she served as an associate minister at the Greater Allen AME Cathedral of New York under the tutelage of Pastors Reverend Dr. Floyd H. Flake and Reverend Dr. Elaine Flake. While there, Dr. Lawrence served as the director of the formerly federally funded One Choice, One Voice, Abstinence Until Marriage Project. In addition to her chaplaincy work, she has a rich consulting practice as a board-certified chaplain and pastoral counselor, a clinical pastoral education diplomat with the College of Pastoral Supervision and Psychotherapy, and is the chair-elect of the COMIS Network on Ministry in Specialized Settings. Take a deep breath. And I'll continue a little bit more because I think this is very important. From an early age, Reverend Denise has had a love for empowering youth in her midst. As a teenager, she established the Eminence Cultural Center, a charm school teaching etiquette and deportment. She believes an enlightened society needs to heed the African adage, which suggests the ruin of a nation begins in a single hut. And I'm going to ask you to share more about what that means to you, Rev. Denise. Therefore, strengthening a community begins with strengthening family ties. Recently, Dr. Lawrence has published her inaugural children's book entitled Walking by Faith, which I mentioned, which reflects the integration of her pastoral care, hospice, and ministerial training to sow into the lives of families. She's excited to share with the WGXC community her thoughts on being your best self. Welcome, Rev. Denise. So wonderful to have you here and see you healthy and ready to go. She's been so patient. What have you been writing down? I saw you. Oh, well, we're going to have 1 second. I'm not hearing you very well at the moment. I think we have to turn your mic on.
Okay.
There we go.
I have myself on mute.
Okay.
Okay. Very good. Well, first of all, Kimberly, I want to thank you so much for this opportunity to be with you tonight. And you and I have been discussing this for a while. So I'm very happy that I have this opportunity to be here. And Tracy, you definitely have my brain cells going. I was not familiar with the concept human potential optimization. And upon hearing that, it made me think of Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And in working with children, and as you said, I want to be able to give this to some of our adults, because this becomes a part of our journey, walking into our authentic selves. And I think something that Kimberly said that's very important. You know, when I was 5 years old, when I was in high school, who I am now, those are different seasons in our lives. And it's not a linear walk. You know, you may be at one place and then you move to another. You may digress and then you come back and you move forward. The thing about Maslow, and that's what made me think of when you were talking about this human potential optimization, it's starting with the physiological needs, our basic needs. And we know that we're living in a time period where there is children that are in need of food, basic food. Sometimes we're in summer and schools are beginning again. And families look forward to school starting again because at least the children may have breakfast and they may have lunch, right? That we have these challenges. Then safety needs. I remember this was discussed in our conversation. Children knowing that they feel a personal level of safety and security. And as we move into adulthood, employment. If we're underemployed or unemployed, those things affect how we feel safe. And then to get to that place of intimacy, of love and belonging. Mm-hmm. So where do I feel love? Where do I feel that I belong? A portion of why I wrote this book is to be able to address how children and this society in which we are living, where you are feeling othered, it's always them versus us. And there's always something missing with us. And that goes right into our next level of esteem. Building respect, self-esteem, status, recognition, strength, and freedom. And that is that place that we get to before we get to what's actually called self-actualization. And that is the ability, the desire to become the most that we can be. So that is being at that place of becoming our authentic selves, but recognizing that we're going through different seasons. I wrote the book Walking by Faith to be able to give children, caregivers, grandparents, practical tools that can be utilized are, first of all, utilizing basic tenets, the tenets of fear, children helping them to overcome fear. There's an acronym for fear, which means false evidence appearing real. And in the book, I have a picture of a little boy. It's dark, there's lightning, there's thunder, and he's peeking out of his covers. So how does a parent work to help him overcome those fears? I actually have a daughter, my youngest daughter wrote a book called Do You Love the Dark? Helping children to, once again, get in touch with those things that feel scary, you know, those little monsters, those little shadows in the room. So that's a very important piece. Looking at them and helping them to understand the importance of utilizing their faith in their struggle. I didn't share that bio. I have to update the bio. But Kimberly knows I recently received a breast cancer diagnosis. And one of the tenets that I walked with and I gave shirts out to my community was a shirt that said faith over fear. That, yes, I received a diagnosis, but didn't allow myself to fall into a place of depression and that feeling of, oh, it's me and I can't do anything about that. It was to recognize that there was a diagnosis, to move forward and to see what we can do and go on before that. So even at a young age, helping children to understand that they can utilize their faith to overcome the challenges in their lives. Another tenet is power. In this particular book that I'm using, I have a picture of a child showing a little autism that we have to understand. One out of 36 of our children have some spectrum of autism. So once again, being able to be supportive to parents and being supportive to our children in the classroom, that they are not othered, that they can feel that safety. They can have a place that they can come to and discuss what it is that they're feeling. And we know that we are in an environment where children, adults, unfortunately, this overexposure to social media are dealing with anger, mm-hmm. you know, helping children to understand that they have control over their selves, their feelings, their emotions, and how they deal with others. And that may come by setting boundaries. We have a national epidemic of bullies going on. And sometimes it is said that hurt people. So children that are feeling that they don't have a mechanism and they don't have a way to express those inner feelings that they're going through, whether their parents are divorced, whether they're growing up in a household where there's a lot of chaos and that they're disconnected. And what they do is they turn around and pass that on to someone younger than them or someone that they feel that they can be in control of. And then that leads us to a tenet of self-control. And I actually use the fruit of the spirit of love, joy, peace, and helping to unpack that. That, yes, there's a saying that in each of us, there are two of us. And there's a Native American tale that a grandfather is speaking to the grandson, and he's telling him, you know, inside of you, there are two wolves that are going on. And one is very aggressive and can hurt, and one is caring. And the child says, well, how do I know which one is going to get bigger? And the grandfather says, the one that you feed. Mm-hmm. So we have to recognize and be able to give and empower and equip our youth that they have the ability, that they can become in touch with these feelings that are inside of them, but it's the one that they feed is the one that's going to become overwhelmed. And then we have peace, wisdom, trust, and purpose. I love this example of purpose, that children, and this is important for educators, it's important for family members to identify early gifts that children show themselves, whether it may be art, it may be writing. And in the book, I actually have a child that at a very young age, she's writing and she's interested in the law. And then she grows up and what does she do? She becomes a lawyer. So So this is something that's important to let children know that those seeds, many times, it's in them at a very early age, but they need the support system around them to allow them to come out. And something that's really missing in our society is respect. Children understanding how to respect elders, and elders meaning authorities, teachers, police officers, anyone that's in authority. So talking about those things, and then love, that they have a God that loves them, who they are, how they are, and that that love can transcend all of the things that they are dealing with. And part of my clinical work that I do, I incorporated what's called a feeling wheel, where you have this wheel of emotions, mm-hmm. and the child is able to see the different emotions as well as read the different emotions. And this is an exercise for parents, for guardians to come in. Child comes in and they seem a little off. You know, let's talk about it. What are you feeling today? I feel sad. What's happening that you're feeling sad? And then letting the children learn some of the basic tenets of our faith, the table blessings, the nighttime prayer, the 23rd Psalm, the Lord's Prayer, and the Ten Commandments. The first part of the Ten Commandments, 1-4, is talking about our relationship with God. And the last 6 is talking about our relationship with one another. So helping children at a very early age understand the benefits of relationships and understanding that the power that they have within. And this is very, very essential for a time in which we are living.
Wow, Reverend Denise, I think that was definitely lessons plural learned. I think maybe 20 lessons there that if you were going to actually teach a course would span over 6 months to a year.
Absolutely.
So like what Tracy said, this is complicated, but can be done. I want to ask you, one of our segments is terms. So, and I'm going to ask you, Tracy, too, about this word. You mentioned the word faith, and in your book, of course, the word faith is part of the title. What is, if you could break it down to just a few words, what is faith and how do you show it, or how is it able to be seen by others, this faith?
Well,
because it's not tactile, right? It's not something
Well, I mean, our audience can't see that, but you can see this. I have a little girl that's climbing over mountains and little rocks. And one of the rocks, it says fear. So when we're talking about faith, it's helping children to know that the God that they believe in, as a Christian, my God is the Lord Jesus Christ, and understanding the tenets that he loves me no matter where I am, no matter what it is that I'm going through. I had a tumultuous childhood. I was a product of teenage parents that were trying to figure themselves out and trying to get actualized and know who their identities were. But I have to say, at a very early age, I had this relationship with God that even though the things that were going on, the chaos that was going on around me, that there was a connectedness. And as I continued to grow, as becoming an older person and definitely as an adult, that relationship just got stronger. So that whatever vicissitudes of life that I may have been experiencing, and as I talked about that cancer experience, that was something that was totally unexpected. But it's because of those seeds of faith that have been implanted in me and that relationship, knowing that I am safe and that I have that place to go to. I mean, those are the type of lessons that I seek to teach children, my grandchildren, those around me, the different programs that I have run working with you. That you're not alone.
Right. Well, I know that for me, faith, kind of like what you demonstrate in your book with the little girl walking over that rock that says fear, is to have the absence of fear so that you can feel actualized or propelled to move forward without, I wouldn't say blindly, but not needing necessarily to know what the path is to like endeavor to do, or like Nike says, just do it because there's not going to be, there's not a negative over that threshold.
It's funny that you use the word blindly because the little girl, when you see her, her eyes are closed.
Ah, okay.
So she is travailing that ground, that tumultuous ground, eyes are closed, blind, but walking in that faith.
And I'm going to ask you on the other side of this segment where we're going to have Garrett give us the number again and let people, you know, into our conversation. And so, and then we're going to have a snippet of a one of the activities that is was highlighted at the Olympics. Okay, so hold that thought, Tracy, because we're going to come back to you. Garrett, can you share with our listeners how to converse with us again?
Absolutely, positively, Kimberly. Area code 518-622-2598. That is, again, area code 518-622-2598. Please add to this bridge of positivity. Be a nut and a bolt in it.
Thank you. And as our production assistant gets us ready for that video, which is an audio for everyone listening, I'm going to set it up. There's a runner, Sydney McLaughlin Devrone, who is what I suppose we would call in America a mixed person of mixed ethnicity, having a mother who is white and a father who is black. I wanted to bring this up because this is a topic that I know I've grown up with, where I've had friends, one who was black and one who was white, get together. They have a child, very young and still in school, as you now have said that, you know, Reverend Denise, that young people growing up trying to figure themselves out when they're still having children. But they didn't have a safe space. Their parents, well, her parent said, you know, if you have this child, you are not our family anymore. You're not part of our home. So she decided she was still going to have her baby. She had the baby, and at once, the grandmother, who said, okay, we're going to disown you, looked at this little beautiful baby, not exactly her color and skin tone, but certainly someone who she found she could love. And she was one of those parents or grandparents that I would see pushing the cart in the grocery store with these little kids that didn't look quite like her. So you wondered, is she the maid? No, you never wondered that. Clearly, she was a relative of these children. And now there's more and more of these children. But the way it was happening in the 80s was that she didn't want her, and this is what she said, she didn't want her granddaughter, her granddaughter to grow up and not see herself. Because this just didn't happen. Black people and white people didn't get together and have children that came out light skin. It just didn't happen. But now there's so many. I mean, they can have their own ethnic identity, right? Their own club if they wanted to. And I just wanted to share a little snippet of this person who, you know, 20, well, I don't know, I can't do the math. Was it 50, 40 years ago where black people and white people didn't get together and couldn't have mixed children, so to speak. So hit it.
The Olympic champion at 400 hurdles. Sydney's got the stick and away she goes.
That was a phenomenal first leg for Shamir Little. 49.6 it's very hard to come out the blocks and run sub 50. A lot of times we see the first leg at 50, so 49.6 was great. And look at Sydney McLaughlin-Lavoni. I mean, this might have been the right move because this race looks like it's over. Nobody is catching Sydney McLaughlin-Lavoni.
Well, she certainly has put the hammer down, but this is only the second leg. Oh my gosh, Jamaica's out.
Jamaica has stopped. Jamaica is out of this final in dramatic fashion. Rashida Adeleke of Ireland in green there is the closest, but it's not very close to Team USA. And getting ready is Gabby Thomas.
Okay, so Sydney McLaughlin, Devrone, she won astoundingly, her gold medal match as a 400-meter hurdler. And then she ran the 400-meter relay, and her leg, she just wiped out all competition. It was just very clear that the U.S. was going to win. Even if someone fell down and rolled around the track a little bit, they would still have been the winner.
I saw that one.
Yeah, she put us so far ahead. So I just wanted to give an acknowledgement to parents maybe of the present. If I don't know what color combination or ethnic identity combinations can be made right now, where someone might have that thought that, hey, you know, I don't want my children having to feel this way because they won't see anyone else that looks like them. So on that flip end, your turn. We're listening for people who are calling in, possibly. But until they do, we can have our roundtable discussion. And feel free to, you know, bring up anything that we have said that makes you think maybe pause with your grandkids, your children, or, you know, how you were when you were younger, or your thoughts. So, Tracy?
Well, one of the things that was coming up when you were both discussing faith is that it's a feeling. It's something you feel. It's not something you know. It's something you feel. And what I wrote down was the belief that you are meant to be here just as you are. And regardless of what God, or if you don't believe in a God, this belief in yourself, right? And wherever that reinforcement comes from, beautiful. But that you feel that. You feel like that is real. And I think that's where you actually transition to being able to use it to conquer fear. I don't think it erases fear. I think we'll always have fear related to new things we're trying or things we don't know. But that it walks with us. It is inside of us, and it comes with us. So we don't have to go through fear alone. We get to go through fear with that feeling of comfort, or some level of comfort. And it's really interesting just hearing the clip as well. So I have my brother-in-law is Indian. And so my niece is mixed race. And I always find it quite curious, because when I look at her, I see a person, right? I don't see, and I know a lot of people use this phrase, I don't see race, and I don't think that's helpful as in part of the big conversation either. But it's interesting when you look at the person and you see that like beautiful little human that I would wish nothing was different about. Okay? And when we can give another human that gift for themselves, that like, I wish nothing different about you, that it gives them the opportunity to believe, oh, maybe I don't have to be different. Maybe I don't have to be paler. I don't have to be darker to fit into one of these categories. I can just be me. It's, again, like a wonderful gift I think any of us can give. So if I have this rule in my personal life that if I'm thinking it, I will tell you it. And whether that's like when I met Reverend Denise, I was like, oh, my gosh, I love your glasses. that I think it and I say it because like this is something that is helpful, that is connecting, that is loving to share. And so maybe not if we're thinking the hate stuff, then let's check ourselves before we just say everything that's coming to our minds. But when we're thinking things that are seeing a beauty in another human, like let's tell them it, right? Because it opens the door for people to see the beauty in themselves. And once you can see that, then you can start to believe it.
Right. And I do think that fear that grandmother felt was something that she learned. I think you can learn fear. It's like when those kids, you know, they're running down, they're playing in the sandbox or something, and they're running and they fall down or something, and they look up to see what their parents or their mom's going to say about that action.
Did I get injured?
Right. And when the mom is like, oh, you're okay, get up, and they get up. But if the mom's like, oh, I'm running, they start crying because they're like picking up on your emotions or learning how they should feel, unfortunately, right? You're shaking your head, Reverend Denise?
Yes, I am. This is a conversation that touches me personally as well. Just as we were talking, I looked up, of course, stats, right? So it says in the 2020 census, 10.2% of the U.S. population, or 33.8 million people, identified as multiracial, which is a significant increase from 1970, when only 1% of babies had parents of different races.
Wow.
So as we're talking about identity and being authentic, that human potential optimization, understand, what do we talk about? Seasons. I came from a family mixed, and what happened within, so the Black community, you have something called colorism. So you guys can see I'm very fair. Yes. And the one portion of the family really only wanted to have fair skinned kids. And if you were brown skin or darker skin, you were not looked at favorably. So that became an issue within the family. My husband is very dark, Caribbean born, and we have four children. And no one is as light as me, but the different hues. And what would happen at around 2 years old, they would all say, "Mommy, how come you're white and Daddy's black?" So I would have to go through the lesson and talk about coloration and the different colors and the hues. There were two books that I said, as we were talking, having this discussion on race, that I highly recommend. One is, I was going to read from that, but we don't really have time, is Cast by Isabel Wilkerson.
Oh, yes. I love that book. About
not even so much race as having a construct, but the caste system. And a lot of times it is related to coloring. And the other book is Stamped from the Beginning, mm-hmm. and from Eva Kendi. And he shares something that's so important, that Carl Linnaeus, back in 1735, made these, broke down the different races and attributes to each of them. Homo sapiens Europeans, very smart, inventive. Homo sapiens, Asiatic, what did he put there? Bottom of this group. At the bottom of the group were the Blacks, where humanity, he called them sapiens of fear, and he called this group sluggish, lazy, crafty, slow, careless. And you see, this is from 1735, but these attributes, unfortunately, even in 2024, like I'm going to get off this call in about 3 minutes, right? And I'm running to the election because that's what we're dealing with. You started the conversation. Is she African American? Is she Black? Is she Asian American? South Asian? She's both. She doesn't have to be either.
She doesn't have to choose.
Her father's Jamaican. Her mother was Indian. She is both.
Yes.
And so we're still growing. We're still growing as a nation and as a people.
Well, I'm thankful that I've had these genuine conversations with my new two favorite people. Well, not new, because Reverend Denise, we go back to Africa's Daughters of the Diaspora. We're going to close out now, but I'm going to give you each a minute to share what one thing you'd like to share with the listeners, but I'm going to add some of the stuff that you don't have to share. If you'd like to contact either of my guests, they have websites, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, everything. And you can find that on www.KimberlyIrwin.me. That's www.KimberlyIrwin.me. Because I will list those things right after this show on that website. But they do have social media sites that you can find them on. Your one last minute, Ms. Tracy?
I would just say find places where you feel like you can get into the conversation. So it's whether you're listening to this show or you have a friend next door, get in the conversation and find ways to stay in the conversation to develop what you think. And that leads to greater authenticity amongst all of us.
Awesome. And Rev Denise?
just remember that we were all wonderfully and beautifully made, and find the beauty and the wonder in every human being that stands before you.
Thank you. And I'm going to say my peace out with love, beauty, joy. I'll ask my guests to remain on and listen to the Olympic fanfare theme. This is positivity at its purest form.